Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Fawcast. And it's going to be a good one because my buddy's here. Ross Peterson. What's going on, buddy?
Hi, Mark. How are you, man?
How are you doing?
Doing well. What's up, Jared Stansbury?
I thought you were talking about me.
No. If I'm the buddy.
No.
That hurts.
So I've got a question for you guys. I asked people who wanted a shout out today, so I got to read through this quick list. These are the Fawcast shout outs for the week.
Wait a minute. You just ask people
who wants a shout out? We're of the people.
You have a full page of shout outs.
Dude, what happens when this gets out of control, or are you just going to shut it down at that point?
We'll shut it down. This is the only time we've done it.
Next week, if you do this, say, hey, who wants a shout out? And you get 326 different people that replied to
say,
hey,
because
how long this list is,
because next,
that's why I'm afraid.
Because next week is the Campbell interview, so there'll be no shout outs.
Also, it's all professionalism. It's shenanigans and goofballs.
It's gonna be shenanigans next week. Trust me, there's gonna be some shenanigans.
What's the hardest hitting question you've got planned for Matt Campbell?
The first one that I'm gonna ask,
don't do that. What is it?
Well, it's the one that if you listen to the podcast, we've been waiting for the answer for 3 years on this one. And that is, the day that he was hired, did he get the gift I left him? That is question one. We're going to get to the bottom of this question for sure.
You left the new head coach a gift?
Yeah. So as the story goes, there's a...
I'm sorry that this is an old hat for the Fawcaster.
It is, but there's a well-known aged real estate agent up in Ames that always gets the coaches when they come into town. And this agent will go...
I do know this story.
The agent will go to the press conferences and introduce herself and say, I'm going to help you buy your house. Right?
We've talked about this now.
So I just said, okay, this once I'm going to try. So that morning I took gifts for his kids up to the football facility and left it with the receptionist at the desk. She said, I'll make sure his wife gets it, no problem. And then she put it behind the desk.
You're just curious if it was ever delivered?
I'm curious if you ever got
the gift. Or did the receptionist take him to her grandkids and say, hey.
It could still be sitting there for
some idiot thought that he could come in and bribe his way into the lives of these guys. Here you go.
So this has been an ongoing thing for 3 years. We're going to get to the answer to that. I'll get back to that.
I want you to prepare yourself for a disappointing answer.
I'm going to get back. I'm going to get back to what else we're going to talk about here in a second.
Okay,
But I got to do it. Tell me if you know any of these people, Jared. Steve B.? Nope. Jared Ransom. Sounds fake. The DFW Cyclones.
I've heard that.
Twitter.
Seen that Twitter account. Yeah.
Now, this one I think was meant to be sexual, but it depends on how I read it. Clint Torres.
Oh, come on. This is what this is going to be? Who wants a shout out?
Oh, man. And really quickly, AJ Klein, Jerome.
Oh, I know AJ Klein.
Hey, Adam Gray wanted one. You know Adam Gray?
Yeah, I know.
AJ Klein really wanted one?
Yeah, I know Adam Gray.
AJ Klein 81.
Oh, okay.
On Twitter.
I thought you meant like AJ Klein, the football player.
No, Josh, another Adam, Smoked Packets. I don't know. That's a Twitter handle as well.
Smoked Packets.
This guy dared me to get his name right. How would you pronounce this? I'm going to go with Gianni Giglio. That's my guess.
G-I-A-N-N-I?
Gianni's fine. I think we probably got that one right. The last name is G-I-G. L-I-O. I'm going with Giglio.
No. I think that's I think you got a harder G in there.
Yeah,
more like a Giglio. Giglio.
See, he says everybody screws it up, and that's what my mind was thinking is probably that. So I went with Giglio.
Giglio could be it. It might be.
I think Giglio would be interesting because that's like the reverse of like Giglio. Or like, what'd you say before? Let's say it again.
I'm going with Gianni Giglio.
And Giglio would be the harder part. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We're going to find out.
Yeah, that would be the least surprising version of
me. He's going to tweet us. And finally, John Bassett. So there you go, guys. Go. Some Fawcast shout-outs. So the Campbell thing. Okay, so the Campbell. Campbell.
4 minutes in already.
Yeah. Campbell hates you. I mean, not you. Not you.
What?
Not
hates me?
Not you personally. The press.
Okay.
Oh. He's not a guy that likes talking to the press.
Yeah.
The press conferences.
Okay.
I
don't buy that, by the way.
I think
I don't buy that.
He's got to do what he's got to do. Now, the great part about next week when we do the podcast with Coach Campbell is I'm not a part of that. I can go in there and kind of do whatever I want to do, right? So I need to do that.
No, okay. No. Yes, you can. Okay. Yes, you can.
There will not be
a second interview if you do this.
There will not be. I've already committed to this because the podcast can go a little blue sometimes, a little sexual. as you may have noticed, from Clint Torres. So there won't be any of that next week. I'm not going to ask Coach any questions related to that topic whatsoever.
Okay.
So that's a good starting point.
Okay.
But I am going to do some fun stuff with him. We might do a version of Never Have I Ever, a cleaner version. We might do a little Big 12 coaching trivia. See how well he knows his brethren in the Big 12.
That's good. That's a good one to do.
There's a lot of ideas brewing around right now.
Yeah, I like those all.
So I'm open to suggestions. What would you like to hear if you're listening to that interview?
If I'm a forecaster, if I'm a diehard Cyclone fan, I would want to know what his biggest hesitations were for taking the Iowa State job.
Yeah.
I'd want to know, I think maybe, and you know, you're never going to get him to like tell you what jobs he would leave you for.
Sure.
But what is his long, does he want to be an NFL coach? And that doesn't mean in 5 years or 10 years, but at some point, does he want to be an NFL coach?
Yeah.
Does he think a position coach at an NFL level is in any way, I mean, if he was offered a lot of money to be a coordinator in the NFL, is that something to go back to Cleveland? Or I don't know, you know, I think those are the types of things. But I don't like to talk to a coach and, you know, when are you going to leave? Why are you going to leave? That's the dumbest thing to do. So yeah. Go backwards with him and say, when you were coming to Iowa State, coming to Ames, Iowa, what were the things that you were hesitant about? What were the drawbacks? What did Jamie Pollard say to you that made you know this was the place? What was it? When was the moment that your wife said, hey, this is a good spot for us to be? Because I believe that. When I see him now, I think he's in this for the long haul. I think that he sees Iowa State as a place that he can really cement a legacy. And he's got the foundation of it built right now. So you get a couple of good seasons here, and then you take that next step and you have maybe a great season in there. Dude, then you go and you take the Ohio State job. We're building a statue for you in Ames. And that's the type of – I think Matt Campbell has that sort of vision around – what he wants to do. And I will tell you, don't buy into the he doesn't like the media. He's way too good. He's way too savvy with the media. He gets it. And he knows that part of that game is you have to pretend you hate it. You have to put off that aura all the time of this isn't for me. Yeah. I'm focused on football. And he is, but he's so good at media, it tells me that's kind of a sly, it's a tactic thing he's doing, and it works. He's good.
And I think too, I mean, anybody that's ever had an interaction with him away from just like the general media scrum, you can definitely tell that he's pretty open to just standing there and talking with you, you know? And he's like, I've just stood there and you just can have a conversation with him about whatever.
I think he's a bit of a different breed having talked to him. I certainly don't get the Gene Chizik vibe. You know, I'm in this for me, and this is the stepping stone. I don't think there's any question about that. That doesn't mean that the guy's going to be at Iowa State forever.
I think there's a couple of types of coaches. And, Jared, you've been around sports long enough and in a different level, in a different way than I have. You've seen assistant coaches at colleges and things like that. You've had interactions with those guys. There's different types of coaches, man. And Chizik and Campbell are two great examples of how different they can be. Gene Chizik, I don't think, was necessarily in it for him. That's not how I would describe it. Gene Chizik was a guy that saw coaches as a bigger part of society than they are. He saw the role of coaches as being this, we're here to breed, to turn boys into men bullshit, right? That's not what the coaches are there to win basketball games and to teach a sport. And along the way, there are lessons that can be learned. And if it's a good man that's in that coaching position, he's going to teach you good lessons. And if it's some douche who thinks that he's there to be your daddy all of a sudden, and he's there to be your drill instructor, that might appeal to some people. That Gene Chizik type never appealed to me, even as a media guy. I don't like coaches that do that. I still am around people from time to time that talk about how, well, you know, football provides you with tools that other things in life don't prepare you for. Well, yeah, so does being a junkie. What does that mean?
Yeah.
All of us have a different experience through life, and we all get different tools. Yeah, you're right. Being in a Division I locker room in a college campus, that has benefits, and it puts things into your life that other people don't get. Absolutely. It doesn't make you better. It makes you different. And I think Matt Campbell's a guy, like, he's the other side of that. He is a guy that seems to understand that a little more. Like, when we talk to him about paying players, and he says, man, he's more of a millennial when it comes to that. He is a progressive thinker. I'm a part of the bigger machine. It's not the Dabo Swinney. Wait a minute. They're here because of me, kiddos. Those rings aren't because I had Watson. No, those rings are because I was the coach.
Yeah.
And that's why they're paying me $8 million a year, and you schmucks are paying $600 for season tickets.
You think Campbell sees it the other way? He's there because of the players.
I think, I don't want to like fluff Matt Campbell's pillow too much here. I don't want to, because that's not why I'm here. But yeah, I do. I think that Campbell's that type of coach. You know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That there, and Jared, again, kind of jump in here with me, because am I right that there are different types of coaches like that
yeah.
see their overall role in society and in your life completely different?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you just look at how these guys approach different pieces of their jobs. Like, I think about Paul Rhodes and, like, the way he was when we covered him, where he would come and he'd do media all the time, but you could just tell that he hated us, you know, like, and you just tell he was jaded about the entire situation, which by the time I got here, obviously things were not going very well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, and I think that he was a little bit different when he first started, to where he was pretty open to the media. And then as things kind of went south,
losing,
he soured on that.
And
yeah.
not just lose a couple years. Like,
yeah.
When you lose control of it and you're in the mud, like that sucks.
But that's where I think that Campbell has some things that are both old school while still being new school. Mm-hmm. Like, he's open to the newness of so many things. Like, you yeah. think about what his staff does with social media.
Great
you
point.
You think about the thing you said about paying players and there's more. The uniforms and stuff like that.
That's what I was just going
to
bring up.
But at the same time, he's an old school football guy, you know, where he's like, I'm here to coach football, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to make a huge deal out of myself because I'm just here to coach football.
Yeah.
You know? And he's not going to go up on the podium and try and make this grand stand. Like what I think Paul Rhodes would try and do sometimes, where he would have some of those speeches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, you think about that one when they beat Nebraska at Nebraska with all the turnovers and stuff like that. What it was, 9-7 game. I don't remember what years. 09, I think. 09 or 10. And he gives his big speech, and that goes viral. And then it seemed like every year he was going to, like, shoot for one time. He was going to give a speech that was going to go viral, mm-hmm. you know? And by the end, it felt like some of those speeches just, like, got stale. It was like, okay, like, what? Like, what's your goal here? I'll never forget when he came in after they just beat Texas 26-0 on a Saturday night in Ames. And he comes in and he goes on this long tangent about Iowa State should never beat Texas and all this different stuff. And it's like, what? I get, like, what you're trying to say, you know, and I know what your point is. But what is the point of, like, coming in to do this? Like, what do you think you're accomplishing by doing this other than, like, grandstanding about something to try and make this win seem like of a way bigger deal than it is? Like, you guys are going to win 3 games, you know?
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, and I mean, it's like I said, I get what he's trying to do, and I know that he saw it as a way to kind of appeal to the fan base that, like, yeah, you know, like, we're doing everything that we can to make this better. But after a certain point, after you've done that 5 times, and the results are still the same, you just kind of look at it and it's like, okay, dude, we get it.
Exactly.
I want to know, too, if I could walk away from that interview next week with one thing. It's understanding a little bit more what goes into the recipe for what he's doing. Like, coaches speak in coach speak. They speak in general terms. They use words like culture, about changing the attitude.
Process.
The process. All of that stuff. Okay. But it's still football. It's still a program that is historically speaking a loser. You're turning it into what looks to be a winner. What is actually changing? Are they lifting more weight? Are they just happier?
Yeah.
Are they, like, what exactly was your plan to turn this around? And you can't say, I just want to change the culture. That's way too vague answer.
Mark,
what does
that mean? Okay, so I think some of it is stuff he can't say to you, like this. He's better at evaluating talent.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Sure.
His guys had to come in here and they had to look around, and Jamie Pollard had to hire a guy, first of all, that was better at evaluating what Big 12 talent was going to be.
Rhodes missed a lot. There's no question.
It's and there's so many other steps to it. I mean, it's not Dan McCarney's fault that Dan McCarney couldn't recruit 17 Big 12 linebackers or Big 8 linebackers. He didn't have the facilities to be able to go out and do that.
Sure.
So he was lucky if he got three. And then if one of those dudes got hurt, he was screwed. And if the other guy transferred, you won one game. And that so the margin of error was so thin. When now you've got the facilities there, it goes back to Jamie, I really do think. You bring the right guy in that's able to look around. That day one, he was able to walk in. And when you talk about we got to change the process, we got to change the culture, what that really means is you guys that suck have to leave.
See, that's kind of what I was going to say. I think a big part of you look at these teams that are pure, like really, really successful, their program, as much as it is that they have these great coaches, it is predicated on being a player-driven program. The players are the real leaders. They are the ones that are holding each other accountable to make sure that they're doing the work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And when it's the coach who's coming in and saying, well, why the hell weren't you in here on Saturday morning lifting? Or why weren't you doing this, getting in and, you know, putting up, if in basketball sense, putting up more shots or getting in the gym by yourself? And, you know, why aren't you getting in there in the indoor facility and running routes and that kind of stuff? It needs to be the players saying, dude, get off your ass and get in there and work. If you want to win, then let's go. Because I want to win, you know? And I think that part of the problem they had there at the trail end of the Rhodes years was that they didn't have enough people that were going to get in your face and say, F this, like, I'm done with this BS. We're going to win some football games. And if you guys don't want to do it, then get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it goes back to that. It's a top-down thing. You had Paul Rhodes who, in some way, even subconsciously, was willing to rest on those laurels. Hey, we beat Texas.
Yeah.
Do you ever remember that speech I gave? Yeah, I'll show you on YouTube. Google me. You know, that was – so anyway, that's
– Google me, Randy.
Hey, slide into last one.
My DMs, yeah.
Best question I have for you for any college football coach, any college coach at all. Give me your recruiting sales pitch. Sell me on being a Cyclone. Yeah. I'm the best receiver in the country. I'm the best defensive tackle recruit in the country, and I'm in Ankeny, Iowa. And Kirk Ferentz just left my parents' living room. What do you say to me in 30 seconds to convince me to be a Cyclone?
Yeah.
And see what his answer is to that. Because I don't know. Maybe then at least you'll get some sort of idea of how that what that process is like. Because, again, I was never recruited by anybody. So that's an interesting process to me. We asked Tom Osborne that. Osborne. If you're going to screw up last names, right? But Tom Osborne, I said the same thing. I'm the best running back recruit in the country. I'm the best wishbone quarterback in the country. Sell me on being a Nebraska quarterback. And his answer was, if I'm in your living room, you've already been sold on why Nebraska. Like, and I was like, oh, that's amazing. That's some Yoda shit right there. Like, if I'm here, you know you're coming to the right place.
Yeah.
And he had that aura about him. And maybe, and again, I don't think Matt Campbell's that dude. I don't think Matt Campbell's the, you know, because of my aura and my presence alone, you will therefore, you know, join the dark forces. No, I think that Campbell's probably going to give you a better answer about.
But here's the thing.
Here's what my idea is for you in 4 years.
Yep. With Campbell, I think his energy is infectious.
You have to be in that position. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying he doesn't have that aura and that CEO type of mentality. It's a different aura.
Yeah.
And again, Tom Osborne is carrying in how many rings on his fingers and all that other stuff that adds to that glow. Matt Campbell's still trying to build that.
But
so I'm interested to see how they attack that because it's the same dude.
Right.
They're just at different ends.
Everybody has their different approach, though. I mean, imagine the same player being recruited and having Campbell in his living room and then Ferentz in their living room, right? It's hard for me to imagine Ferentz firing anybody up. I can get there with Campbell.
I can imagine with Coach Ferentz what that sounds like in a very methodical way. He's going to explain to you all those things that you would want to know. We have a strength and conditioning coach on campus that has turned tight ends into NFL linemen. Not good NFL linemen, great NFL linemen. We've turned 3-star and 2-star prospects into guys that were getting drafted. I've done that, and here's how we do it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're going to get a really good education because a lot of our guys graduate with degrees that are astonishing, and you're going to make a really good living even if you don't do this thing. And there's all these other benefits that come along with being a Hawkeye football player. And I think he would break those things down in a very real way. Matt Campbell's probably going to be able to sell you on you're part of a bigger picture right now.
He can't sell the NFL dream at this point.
Well, and I think in the next couple of years, he might be able to, because you're going to get a couple of guys that start trickling into that. And it'll be, again, it's that talent evaluation that's all coming through. But more than that, you're still on that process that you're talking about. You're still on the upswing. There's still a Chuck Long waiting to be found here for Iowa State.
Yep.
The guy that takes you from good to great. And not that Seneca Wallace and Sage Rosenfels and all of these Cyclone legends aren't fantastic. My point is when that next leap happens, that's Matt Campbell's sales pitch. You're going to be, I'm looking for that dude. That's not, Kirk Ferentz can't sell that.
See, and I think too, you know, kind of going back to that, and then kind of going back to what I said about Paul Rhodes before, there's just such a different approach to the way they go about this entire thing. With Paul Rhodes, if he comes into my living room and talks the way that he would talk in the media, it would feel like he's preaching to me.
100%.
And I don't want to sit there and listen to some guy preach to me, you know? If the way that Matt Campbell seems, and I know that when he does his speech after they beat TCU and all that stuff, the fact that a camera in there is probably by design. It's like he's going to give a really good speech right now. But at the same time, he's not a guy that's just going to come in there and preach to you and be like, all rah, rah, and like all this kind of stuff. He's going to be real with you, you know? And he's going to sit there and he's going to say, you can be the number one defensive tackle in the country, or you could be a two-star defensive tackle from Newell Fonda High School in Iowa. And we're going to treat you the same way. We're all going to care. We're going to care about you the exact same way. And you're going to come in, and if you work your butt off, I promise you good things are going to happen.
Yep.
And it's like that's – and I feel like that's what he's going to tell him. He's like, you're not promised anything, but we're going to have fun. And if you work hard, it's going to go well. And that's what I can tell you.
Ask him that. That's a good one. There's my best question to offer.
All right. I'll try to sneak that in after I've given him a crispy burrito from Taco Time. I built it up. I figure I should just deliver him some food too. You guys are just looking at each other.
Taco Time.
Taco Time. Have you ever been to Ames before? Do you know where Ames is on the map?
Yeah, it's those guys up north.
Taco Time, you know? I don't even need to get into it with you. It's just, you're missing out. Let's put it that way.
My experiences in Ames, Charter, were a little bit different than yours, I have a feeling.
So let me ask you this question, because I like the way your brain works, Ross.
Okay.
And I was thinking about this. My brother, who's known for tweeting exactly how he feels about stuff, was talking a lot about track last week and winning and good coaches versus bad coaches and all of that. But it made me think about the idea of winning, just the idea of winning itself. You got people, especially that don't win, that will say, winning's not the most important thing. It's the effort that matters. It's trying your best. It's whatever. My question to you and Jared is, where does winning fit in? For Matt Campbell, winning's pretty darn important. If he doesn't do it enough, he gets fired, right? But, and then you can say, well, it's just a game. Doesn't ultimately matter, etc. So don't just look at it from the perspective of coaches, but life. Does winning matter?
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so explain to me why. And I think we're on the same page here, but why does winning matter if it doesn't have something to do with your job specifically?
Why does winning matter if you're playing Monopoly with your family?
Anything.
There's a pride that comes with knowing that you are, in any way, in the most minute, silly ways, better than people around you. And that sounds...
That's what I was just going to say.
It sounds so, like, weird and egotistical, but that's a fact. That when you do something and you find out that you are better than your peers at that thing, even if it's for a moment... I know I'm not a better basketball player than Jared. The dude played college basketball. I peaked in like my sophomore year. We played AAU basketball.
Mm-hmm.
If I go out and I hit 5 threes in a row and Jared only hits 3 in a row, in that moment, I'm like, yeah, do you see what I just did?
Yep.
I beat a dude. And there's a whole nother psychology that comes with like underdog, you know, and all that. But winning in itself, just like down to its core, it's absolutely important. It's important to build confidence, all sorts of things.
If you want to be the best, which I think most people want to be the best at what they're doing, how can you be the best if you don't win?
So here's the thing that nobody wants to talk about, okay?
the people that would have the opposite approach to you, the opposite answer, the ones that say it winning's not the most important thing. It's about how you play the game. It's about whatever. Is that a token statement from losers?
No. Those are true statements. Okay. The answer is like kind of in the gray between, because those things are also really important. If you're cheating, if you're not following the rules that everybody else is following, then your win does not carry that same feeling that we were just talking about. If Jared's shooting from the three-point line, but I know I'm taking a quarter step up every time.
Sure.
I know that. And you know this from a very young age. Like, you have kids, Mark. How old's your son now? He's six, seven?
Seven.
Seven right there?
Seven.
Playing sports?
Yep.
Dude, he gets it. He's gotten it for 3 years, hasn't he?
Yep.
Because my son was about 4 years old, and he got a participation award that first year that we played baseball, and he lit up. When he was four, I mean, lit up. I thought that was the coolest thing. At the end of the year, they put that ribbon around that kid's neck with that medal. And I still have the picture today of him grabbing the medal, that look on his eye. And he looked up at his mom and I like, look at what I just won.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, he knew when they won and lost games. When he was five, he was keeping score in his head.
Yep.
And when we got done with the T-ball game and all, and kids, some kids were worried about treats. There were two or three kids that were going, hey, I think the final score we lost.
Yeah.
Did we lose this game? Now that he's not, or 8 years old now they're all that way. There's maybe one or two kids that are still like, hey, which mom brought the treats?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
The other nine kids on the baseball team are yelling, they're gripping in the dugout. We lost 4-2.
Yeah.
They know, you know what winning and losing
and
feel
they know it even before there is a score being kept.
Exactly. We're not even, last year, you're not even supposed to keep score. They knew.
Which tells you that instinctively or intrinsically within you, it does matter.
You want it. You want that gratification of knowing we were better in this moment than these guys in this competition. That's why you sign up to do that stuff. That's why you agree. That's why you do anything.
I remember playing I was in the fourth grade, and one of my friends' dads put together a basketball team. It was the first time we were ever going to go around and play in tournaments and stuff like that. And all the tournaments were for kids like in fifth and sixth grade. So we're in fourth grade, we're going to these tournaments and playing fifth and sixth graders. In our first tournament, we went there and got third place. And I just remember, I can remember it like it was yesterday, me and my friends walking out of the gym, pissed off that we got third place when we're a year younger, 2 years younger than all the other kids playing. And it's like, that is, there's just like a difference in some people from a really early age. It's just like you mentioned, to where they're very cognizant mm-hmm. of the fact that, yeah, we won some games. They might be older than us,
yeah.
but we didn't win.
Yeah.
And if we don't win, we're not gonna be happy until we do win.
Mark, I remember when I was 10 years old, our baseball coach for the Little League Minor Royals, actually, it might have been the next year, but his name was Randy Childs, one of the best Little League coaches I ever had, because the dude had fire. He mm-hmm. wanted to win Little League games.
Yep.
And the very first day of practice, he told us, guys, we are here to have fun, and nothing is more fun than winning.
Sounds like my dad.
And that's a real thing. Like, you guys want to have fun. My son, we went from playing Little League. He started doing U-triple-S-A. We took his little league team and went and played U-triple-S-A. We lost a game 36-0. Okay.
Oh, man.
It was a learning experience for all of them. Cause these kids that thought they were great and the best 8-year-olds on the planet realize there's kids in their county that can beat them 40-0.
Yeah.
Okay. And it also, they want to win. They knew, now they want to get better. They want to come back and play teams that they can compete with, and they want to feel like they want that feeling of winning. So when we go back to Little League on Monday night and we won a game 1-0, they're doing cartwheels in the dugout, which they weren't doing beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, it gives you that perspective. That.
See, that was one of the things when I got to Simpson, and I don't want to go too deep into this, but I think that there was a level of the culture that they were bringing in people who were coming from high school programs that did not win. And as a product of that, these kids didn't care that much mm-hmm. whether or not we won or lost. So when it came time for a game where it was like, it's like really like gut check time, are we gonna win, are we gonna lose? We'd lost a ton of close games that year.
You see that in college basketball every year, Jared, don't you?
And there were so many people that just, they were so complacent with like, oh, we lost again, whatever. Yeah. And I don't know how many times we had these come to Jesus meetings where we're sitting in there, and I got made fun of because I'm a freshman, you know, and we're out in the middle of nowhere in the state of Washington. We just got beat by like the number 10 team in the country by like 4 points. We were winning the whole game, and they came back and beat us right at the very end. And we're sitting in this meeting in a classroom up above the gym. And I said, I came from a program where we won, and I'm tired of this. We were like 1-6. I was like, I'm tired of this. And I don't know what it takes for you guys to want to win, but I'm going to do whatever the hell I got to do for us to win some basketball games. Because I'm not putting up with this for a whole year. I'm not putting up with this for 4 years. I can't do it. And there were too many of those guys that, like I said, they were content with just being there, playing basketball, having fun, playing some basketball. And it's like, if I'm going to be here playing basketball, we're sure as hell going to do everything we can to win the game.
I don't know if there's anything worse than when you want to win or you want to achieve something and then you meet apathy and indifference. And like they don't care.
That's, yeah. You know, you've got to surround yourself, you know, the birds of a feather type thing. You got to surround yourself with like-minded people. As a parent with your kid, that's a really important thing, as you're finding out too, Mark. Like, we didn't want to do the USSSA travel ball thing when we were 6. We wanted to do Little League with all the neighborhood kids.
Sure.
So everybody, try to teach everybody how to play catch type of thing.
Yeah.
And now, so we found a group of parents that wanted to do that. And then last year went, maybe next year we put our toe in that water,
yeah,
and see what happens. This year we played in a tournament, 2 tournaments,
yeah,
maybe 3 at the end of the summer. And then maybe next year we'll play in 5. We'll do 1 a month, something like that.
Yeah.
And then the following year, if we really feel like we're able to compete, we'll start to. But we'll slowly evolve into it. And some of those parents won't want to go on.
Yep.
Some of those parents will want to go faster.
Yep.
So
we're definitely at the age of Seton being 7. There's 10 kids. I'm the assistant coach, not the manager, thank God. 10 kids on his team. And the coach and I are, without even saying, are completely on the same page. His kid, my kid, and there's another kid. It's like, these three, they're already talking about next year doing what you're talking about, mm-hmm, going into a different spot. Because the 7, some is talent, a lot of it is just don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're asking about the treats. They're laying down in the outfield, constantly have to be telling them, watch the ball, watch the ball, watch the ball. With the kids, the 3 that I'm talking about, that just isn't there.
And they
want to be there. Yep. They look forward to it. They know what they're doing for, yep, the most part.
See, and that's what's crazy is that those – you said there's 10 kids on the team.
Yep.
Those other 7 are the same ones that I almost can guarantee you they're going to get to high school and they're going to be doing the same things.
No.
When it's time for open gym and stuff like that.
No, Jared, they change so much. That's
well, not. I'm not saying they're not going to lay down in the outfield, but I'm saying when it comes time for open gym or extra batting practice or all these other things that it takes to like be really good, they're not going to be there.
I'd tell you the exact opposite.
Really?
This is the biggest mistake that parents make. Is looking at a 7, 8, 9-year-old kid and trying to project what that person's going to be like at 14, 15, 16. That's just, it's impossible.
It can be the same, but it can also change.
It absolutely, yeah, can. And there's certainly some, you know, natural tendencies that you're observing there that won't change. But there are those kids that at 12 years old, when maturity hits and that testosterone enters their blood, everything's different. And now they're engaged and they realize girls like to be around a winner and a strong dude and the guy that knows how to wrestle. And all, yeah, of a sudden, everything is different and that dude's fire is lit. I've seen one of my best friends is a guy that when we were 10, he was the fat, chunky kid that played 2 innings in right field and was lucky to get an at-bat. And we, yeah, kept the ball away from him because we were afraid he'd hurt himself. And he ended up playing college baseball. I mean, the guy, so.
At this age.
It all changes.
At this age, I think it just comes down to, a lot of it comes down to parent involvement, Ross. I think you'd be the guy that, if you had the kid that was 7 years old and kept facing the wrong way in the outfield and you heard the coaches being like, turn around, turn around, turn around. I think you get on your kid about it and say,
dude,
hey,
yeah,
you need to pay attention when you're out there. And as a coach, that's the most frustrating thing. It's just the littlest, simplest things that they will not do. And you can tell them within one game 50 times to stand up, and you keep every time you turn around, they're back down on the grass, laying down. It's like you just want to give up at,
yeah,
that point and say, all right, this isn't in your future. We need to figure out something that you're
a little better at than
this. So, but, you know, it's also good for me to be a part of it. You know, it's good sometimes to be frustrated with things and work through things.
I think this is my last thing I'll say. What I was going to say is just kind of when we talk about this wanting to be a winner and when kids get into that point where they're like in high school and you've got all the extra things that are going on, it's like you know, everybody talks about, oh, I want to win. I want to win. Okay, what are you doing to win? Mm-hmm. What are you doing that's going to help us win? If you're not there,
yeah.
If you're not working, and then it comes time for the season to start and you don't play, and you're like, well, why am I not playing?
Yeah.
What have you been doing for the last 10 months to help us win?
Yeah.
That all of a sudden when we got to win, you think that you can help us.
Part of the other thing that's different now, feels different than when I was growing up, which was forever ago, is it feels like life is a lot busier now. So you've got kids that won't be able to make the practice because they've got golf or they've got swimming or they've got dance or whatever that is. I never felt like I had those conflicts growing up. Maybe there's just more things available now to do.
No.
You don't think that's changed at all?
Are there more things for kids to do? Yeah. I remember having to choose between wrestling and basketball because those things conflicted. And my son, we have to do that same thing as we're making up schedules. That is 100% on the parents. Dude, we were just talking about this before we came on. Life, this is a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Life, you can do what you want to do. You're as busy as you want to be. Don't sign your kid up for three sports at one time.
Yeah.
If your kid wants to learn how to golf, then find the time to golf that doesn't interfere with the one or two practices a week for the 6 or 8 weeks he's going to do baseball. That's 100% on the parents. That's not a life thing. People that I'm a busy guy, man. I always feel like I'm letting people down and dropping balls. And who's that on? That's on me. I need to learn how to say no. I need to learn how to tell my kids Tuesdays we can't do stuff. Sure. Fridays we can't do stuff. Dad has to go call the races so that we can try to go to Disney World at the end of the summer if we want. So that's, you have to set your priorities and make those decisions. That's just being an adult, I think.
I don't disagree. Let me ask you another in the news topic yesterday. Again, you're getting the Ross takes. That's why people are tuning in, man. Mm-hmm. I absolutely don't want to go political on this. That's not the intention. But anthem protests are back in the news yesterday. Let's forego what the protests are about for a second. I don't want to talk about what they're about or what they're not, because that's a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
Can I say that real quick? Is it a little ironic that new policy came out and then the same exact day is when this whole exact thing is put right back into the news with Sterling Brown in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. So here's my take. Here's where I'm going with it. Couple of things. One, you've got you don't have the issue that I want you to touch on if you can. You don't have the same issue in the NBA. Okay, that's one thing. Football and basketball are different in this area. There's no doubt about that. So one of the questions is, why do you think that is? But beyond that, I look at it in its simplest form. Tell me where I'm wrong here. Okay, you've got an employer that is paying these players to play a game, right? The employer is the employer's time. Okay, they're at the game, employer's paying them to be there. You can make the argument pretty easily, I believe, that the protests haven't necessarily helped the bottom line. I think it's hurt them more than helped them. What is wrong with an employer, any employer, not even an NFL employer, telling somebody, by all means, protest all you want, but you got to do it on your own time? I don't see that as a bad thing. And it's very easy to be labeled a hater, a racist, whatever, if you say that. But that's as simple as I see it, is protest all you want, just don't do it on my dollar and my time. What is wrong with that approach?
Touching on the first piece, the difference between basketball and football.
Yeah.
With basketball, so the thing that actually boils down to the center of this and what they came out with yesterday is that these rules in the NBA, the rule with the national anthem is collectively bargained into the CBA that you will stand for the national anthem.
Yeah.
That is not present in the NFL's CBA.
Yeah.
And that's where part of the problem with what happened yesterday is that all of a sudden the NFL comes out with these rules and the players' union says, we didn't agree to this.
Yeah.
This is not in our CBA.
They put it in the game operations manual.
Which isn't
collectively bargained.
They are a unionized group.
Yeah.
You have to collectively bargain with them. You can't just make rules and say, you got to abide by them to an extent.
To an extent. Again, I'd be careful trying to draw those definitive lines, because that's the fact is they showed yesterday they can. There's loopholes for a reason, and they can do this. Whether or not you like it or not, they've made the rule that says that
This These is just guys based are on my very basic understanding of
And I understand, and you're absolutely right about the collective bargaining part of this. That's, but they did the loophole. They put it into the game operations manual, which is not a part of the collective bargaining agreement. So they can put things in there, all sorts of stuff. What time guys have to show up before games, all sorts of stuff. Who they're allowed to contact on game days. And that doesn't get collectively bargained. So they loopholed it. I'm not trying to say it was right for them to do that, but that they did it. So we can't say things like, well, they're not allowed to do this. They did it. There's so much stuff to unpack with this, Mark. Not even getting into the politics of it all, man. But the one of the things that Jared touched on with the difference in basketball and football, and it dovetails with something that I've heard other guys say, and I wish I could really pinpoint. Maybe it was Mitch Widmeyer, the guy who's been filling in for Chris this week. He talked about Adam Silver. Now, when you look at Roger Goodell and his relationship with NFL Players Association, NFL players, and then you look at Adam Silver and his relationship with NFL players, it's a totally different, I mean, again, opposite ends of the spectrum. Roger Goodell, very much a commissioner for the owners. Adam Silver very much seems like a commissioner for the players, even though he's appointed by the owners. I mean, he does a great job of kind of transcending those two roles. Roger Goodell does not. He's drawn hard lines in what he's done. Maybe that's a part of it. And don't think that the NBA players haven't spoken out and protested. The Cavaliers that wore the hands up, don't shoot shirt or something like that?
They certainly do it. They don't do it during a moment that some people feel is important.
But, dude, so this is the crappiest part of this. I've been screaming about this since this started. This is all designed to get your political ires up and get you pissed off at your neighbors and your family and your friends. And the entire thing is about money. I'm not talking about a conspiracy theory here. Real talk. The NFL gets money from the U.S. military to advertise what a wonderful product the U.S. military is. And how do they do that? By showing us these incredible reunions that happen and yank on your heartstrings.
Well,
okay?
Field size flags and the whole
All deal. Of that garbage, yeah. man. It's yeah. money. Why are the owners telling the players what to do? Why do the owners tell the players that they can't wear Budweiser labels on their thing? Because there's money there. And if you are out there wearing a thing that says Coors Light, Budweiser is going to be pissed at us. So don't wear your Coors Light socks to the game, right? I mean, that's a rule. This is the exact same thing, but because we've put the flag in it, because we've got the president talking about it, and because the military is involved somehow, even though this started with police brutality and things like that, we've turned it into something so much bigger. I've been screaming about this since it started. Like everybody's falling for it. It's disgusting. It's sickening. So whenever you see these things, and I don't mean to ruin what's supposed to be a happy, good moment, you should all be pissed off every time that the U.S. military, which, by the way, I'm the son of a vet. One of my biggest regrets in life is that I didn't join the military. I have profound respect for guys that serve for the military. But this crap that the military does that sells us on what a beautiful thing serving in the military is, and how backwards this is. Like the emotion wrapped up in a family that hasn't seen their soldier, whether it's their mom or their kid.
Yeah.
They haven't seen the kid in like 3 years. And they tell you, yeah, it's been 3 years. And they embrace in a hug that you've never seen in your life. Like they grip on for life. Why are they doing that? Because for 6 years we separated them from those people. We took the most important thing in their life and we took them to another kind. Like in a weird way, it's almost like one of those ransom movies at the end, you know, where you're seeing the mom embrace her kid again and fall apart. Like, I never thought I was going to see you again. And somehow that is the warm fuzzy that makes somebody in the crowd go, damn it, that's why my kid's in the junior ROTC right there. I can't wait for the day my kid is lucky enough to get back from war. Like, it just pisses me off, man. And this is all a part of that. It's all wound into the same dollar. And we continue to fight over, well, do you love America or not? It's the same thing with keeping up your blanking Christmas lights. Like, you don't love Jesus more because you left your Christmas lights up longer.
You don't?
Do you?
I thought you did. I don't want you to escape this question, the important one, because you're ranting, which is good. Let me just give you a completely different scenario, okay? You're at your job today, this afternoon. Yeah. This afternoon.
And I wish I would have had my notepad. I wrote that down.
And you and Chris decide,
You want to protest people not taking care of their cats right.
Yeah.
Okay? So the show starts, and you guys both agree to do 2 minutes straight of dead air.
Mm-hmm.
That affects your employer.
100%.
Okay, so where is that line?
And that's what I was trying. That's why we're to this point, because it does directly affect the dollars that the employer are bringing in. So they get to tell the employee, don't mess with my stack. That's yeah. what this is. This yeah. is the pimp hand.
Yep.
Don't mess with the count. Okay.
And is there anything wrong with that?
No, but Mark, if you are honest about it,
yeah.
if you come down and you say, look, how do you guys not see how this is affecting our bottom line? This is one of our advertisers. Just like all of these other groups, the military, the U.S. military is an advertiser. Yeah, we do it in a different way, and it's disgusting how we pull on heartstrings to sell their product for them, but they're an advertiser. And you guys, and this pissed them off somehow. I don't know how these idiots somehow took this thing into you hate the military if you kneel during the national anthem,
yeah.
but that's where we are with it. And I'm sorry that we don't control that narrative. I'm sorry that Colin Kaepernick couldn't control that narrative the way he tried. But it happened. That's out of our control. Here's what we can control. We need those dollars. And you guys have to do what you have to do. I told this story on my show yesterday. I worked at a place called Lone Star Steakhouse. Do you guys remember that? You probably do.
Yep.
So I had a couple gimmicks about Lone Star Steakhouse. It was like a $6 an hour job in high school, okay? Maybe less at that time. And one of the things was you could walk in and get a handful of peanuts and crack the peanuts and just throw the shells on the floor, yep. right? So then I was the idiot that had to come around at the end of the night and sweep up the peanut shells. But the other gimmick was there's a song by David Allan Coe that's called You Never Call Me By My Name. Have you ever heard it? It's a classic old country song. It's a really beautiful song about a guy that's struggling with his relationship with his wife and all this stuff. And the very last verse is a comedy verse. And he says, you know, my friend Steve Goodman wrote this song, and he told me he'd written the perfect country and western song. And I told him he hadn't written the perfect country and western song because he hadn't talked about mama or trains or getting drunk or being in the rain or pickup trucks. And he goes through all those stereotypes. Yep. Well, then the final verse is all of those stereotypes rolled into one. Well, I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison, and I went to pick her up in the rain. But before I could get to the station in my pickup truck, she got run over by a damned old train. So it's the perfect country and western song in one verse. So when that song played twice a shift, every employee, host, hostesses, waitress staff, chefs, dishwashers, bathroom staff, everybody had to come out, circle the bar, back to the bar, face to the customers, and sing the last verse of the song. And it had all of this Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer extra crap thrown in, you know? Like, you know, you get to one of the things, you go, what happened? And then the rest, it was ridiculous. But you know what? If you didn't do it, you got fired.
Yep.
If you didn't do what your boss told you had to do for $6 an hour, you can go find another job. And I know it's a horrible comparison because the skill set that it takes to be a sweeping up nutshells is not nearly the same as what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, receiver, lineman, or any of that stuff. But to your point, Mark, employers absolutely have the right to tell you what to do and tell you what their expectations for your behavior are. Collective bargaining aside, Jared, you're right about that. But that doesn't exhaust you from all responsibility. Like the boss is still the boss. And we've seen that with Colin Kaepernick and who's the other guy that's suffering here? Eric Berry, right?
No.
Anyway, Kaepernick is certainly the poster boy for it. You know, he's in a lawsuit right now because of this. Well, the boss has decided you're not worth that trouble. You're adding all of this other headache, and that's not so. No, if I had been the guy that stood up every night and said, I hate this song, I'm not going to do this, I'll sweep the peanut shells, but I'm not singing the song. After a while, they just said, you know what, he's really good at sweeping the peanut shells, but geez, is it worth it?
No.
Like one of the dishwashers decided he wasn't going to sing along now too.
Yeah. So I think my biggest beef with the issue is that it's not just about that. It isn't just about that. We made it about so much more than that. Mm-hmm. I realized that was the original intent. If you go way back to when it first started, there's something to that. I'm not dismissing all of that. Kaepernick felt strongly about something. Totally get that. But it became something that's disruptive to the bottom line of the people that write the checks. And I don't see it as anything bigger than that.
And Mark, if that were the conversation we were having, it wouldn't be nearly as divisive. It wouldn't be, the president wouldn't be talking about it. if this were the conversation about what it really should be about, the money, that the U.S. military, I don't even know how much it is, and probably in the grand scheme of things, it's not a giant chunk of what the NFL is dependent upon.
Yeah.
But it's enough. It's enough that to carry this weight. I mean, it's enough for them to announce yesterday, the NFL announced that all 32 owners were unanimous in support of this. Well, we know now that's total bullcrap.
Yeah, it's not.
That the 49ers owner abstained from voting. The Jets owner has said he's going to pay the dude's
fines.
Like,
yep.
What? What?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. So it's not going away. Unfortunately, that's what we know. I asked you a question before we get out of here. A couple things I got to do still. I got to update this poll I took. You saw me eating something when I came in here, and I wanted your take on the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish.
What do you mean you want my take on it? It's an awful food choice. Have you ever had like real fish? Have you ever had a good piece of fish in your life?
It certainly has.
Because that would not qualify as fish.
I've had it's the freshest fish you can have. I've been in Canada and had shore lunch.
There you go. Exactly. Right? I'll be having that in September. Absolutely right.
You know?
Yes.
It doesn't get any fresher. I mean, 5 minutes out of the water and it's in your stomach.
The difference is, here's the difference.
I'll eat a Big Mac about once every 3 or 4 months. I'll be driving. I'll go, you know what? I want a Big Mac.
And I pay for it. It's disgusting. It feels like I ate a brick like an hour and a half later, right?
Yeah. But the Filet-O-Fish.
I think what it is, I had that shore lunch up in Canada, I'm pretty sure maybe it had some lemon seasoning put on it or whatever like that. There was no tartar sauce up there. I'm pretty sure it's the sauce that gets me hooked on the Filet-O-Fish. But you'll be happy to know, so I took a poll before. We're 60 votes in. Your choices were McDonald's Filet-O-Fish, awesome, or barf. Mm. Barf is leading with 76%.
Very smart audience. That's why
I
love coming on this podcast because I always get really – people send me the nicest tweets, and then I get reaffirmation like this.
The funny thing is, and I can't think back all the 39 years I've been alive, but I'm pretty sure the Filet-O-Fish has been on that menu – kind of the whole time.
It's funny. I was going to say this to you before we went on and we were first talking about it. I always thought that was kind of like the, what do they call the Shamrock Shake? Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
It's only there for a short period of time.
Or the McRib.
The McRib, I think, is the other one I was thinking of. I thought of Filet-O-Fish, like there's no way that thing is, enough people buy that thing that it's there all the time.
Yeah. It's not even like a side menu, like on the dollar thing.
No,
it's a meal.
Yeah, they're really getting you for that.
It's number 7. Jared, you were...
In their defense, it's got to be a lot of money to run those machines that process that crap that looks like that. And
that square fish patty you're talking about?
Yeah, so hats off to the machines that produce those.
That's another question. Why is it square versus circular to fit the bun? That's another oddity about it. Jared, you said you've never had one.
I've never had one, but my stance is that like I'm not going to eat one. I'm not a fish person. So, but if you want to eat one, more power to you.
I did eat one.
I know, that's what I'm saying. We're all eating McDonald's and it's all trash for us. Anyway,
I had Hardee's today. I'm not some pretentious like anti-McDonald's guy.
If it came out that McDonald's was putting like crack cocaine in their sauce, would you be that surprised to get people addicted to their food?
Everybody knows about the documentary Super Size Me.
Yeah.
I mentioned from time to time my favorite podcast on the planet is Revisionist History by Malcolm Gladwell. Mm-hmm. And in season one, he does a podcast about the McDonald's French fries.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that one.
It's a must listen. If you remembered McDonald's fries from when we were kids, or if you think that McDonald's fries right now are still the best things on the planet, take 45 minutes and listen to that on a road trip someday.
From a taste perspective or ingredients perspective? Because they are
taste.
Good.
I mean, obviously, we're going back to Filet-O-Fish. Nobody's going to argue that ingredients-wise, McDonald's is, you know, la me. Right? So
I think McDonald's, if you compare the big three fast food, if you consider, Hardee's, Burger King, Wendy's, McDonald's, I think McDonald's clearly has the best tasting fries.
So I think an underrated fast food burger in Des Moines is A&W.
Okay.
Where is there an A&W?
Over on the east side, on East University.
Are you using the term fast food loosely with that? The last time I was at an A&W, I went to the A&W in Indianola.
Oh, really?
Okay. About a month and a half ago. I had a client there. I was hungry. It was nighttime. So I went in. Okay. Time warp.
You ever been to that one over there?
I've never been to that one.
They still have the phones at the table.
Oh, I got to get there.
They have the old lampshade decor like hanging overhead, whatever. And it probably took them 12 minutes, 13 minutes.
There's that means they made your burger
for
you.
I know, but you're using fast. That's not fast.
What I thought you were going to say is, because you will not find a fast food place on the east side that is actually fast. Not a one.
Yeah.
Not one. And the further east you go, like that McDonald's in Pleasant Hill, it's incredible. It will take you minutes to get a pop at that Pleasant Hill High.
So you're McDonald's. Saying the it's Ankeny awful. McDonald's is employing cheetahs and they're employing sloths over there.
Something like that. And even even the A&W, because it's an A&W Long John's. It's over there on the east side. I mean, you got to be patient. You know, it's.
So yeah.
I don't understand people that get that upset about like a few minute wait at a fast food. Like, what are your expectations, man? Relax. Okay?
This is what's amazing to me, the difference between the various places you go. I don't know how they do it, but on average, from the time you order to the time you have your food at, I'll use Ankeny as an example, at Wendy's, ordered to gone, 3 minutes, typically. Very, very, very fast.
Okay, so
and Burger King.
Yep,
at least double that.
Okay, 6 minutes.
Yep, and I'm not talking about with other cars. I'm just talking about your order, etc. Right. And I'm always like, why is it so different from place to place?
Flame broiled, baby. Gotta watch out for that.
Is that it? Is that the
my
answer?
My point would be, you're an adult. Build 3 minutes into your lunch.
This is what society is today. We want it now.
Dude, I get your time is expensive. I understand that. Are you 3 minutes?
Well, I don't
know. 3 minutes?
The good thing about having a computer at your disposal all the time is you can do something while you're
waiting.
For your
you're probably just sitting there keeping yourself busy. I mean, I would even say maybe it would be more relaxing for you if you took those extra 3 minutes while you're sitting in the Burger King drive-thru, just close your eyes.
Wait for the honk behind you.
Relax for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Try to tune out the world. So, and just see if for a moment you can connect back to that.
So, Mr. Patient.
Okay.
At what point on the clock do you start to feel an inner rage building? At what point are you like, all right, this is ridiculous?
I do get the inner rage thing. But mine, I think, is I like to attribute it more to like those other surroundings. You know, if for some reason the person has upset me during the interaction, during my order, if that person has seemed like an idiot or they've, you know, can I get it? I want my burger with no tomatoes. Oh, well, there's already tomatoes on it. And you're like, screw you. Take a tomato off my burger. Whatever, you know, something like that. I think that's more of it. And then if you add in, I'll give you a great example. Okay. My wife, who also is pretty short tempered like myself and very verbal when she gets mad, horrible combination. we're at the McDonald's again over on the east side, right there off of 14th Street. And we're in the drive thru. We just had the baby, and our baby girl was very colicky. So she whined and fussed and cried 24 hours a day. So as you know, Mark, you're on edge anyway. Like you're ready to punch through a window. Yeah. You're so angry with stuff. We order our stuff. We come around the corner and there's a car at the window. We're behind it and the baby is going nuts. And again, 3 minutes, I'm good. 5 minutes, I'm good. Like, you know, get the phone out, maybe looking at emails. You're maybe playing infinite golf, something like that. Build a bridge, having fun. 10 minutes, I'm getting like, what in the hell's going on? And I realize that there's a conversation happening and the baby's crying the whole time. Wife's pissed off. She's like, what's going on? What's going on? And now all of a sudden, like, they start playing grab ass through the window.
Yep.
The girl's like chucking sauces out the window into the car. They're throwing food back into the window and they're all laughing and shit. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be, and I know with my wife, this is going to be bad news. So sure enough, that car pulls away and we roll up. And I mean, we aren't even to the window yet. And my wife's like, get your manager. And the girl's like, whoa, what's the problem? What's the problem? And Aaron's like, we saw what you were doing that entire time. Get your manager. We've been waiting for our food. We've been 10 minutes with this baby crying in the back seat. And she's just volcano erupted on this girl. And the girl's like, oh, no, that, you know, I didn't even know those people. And then I'm like, you know, okay, that's bull.
So
I'm driving.
So you're literally and figuratively in the middle of this.
And like, then they're but now at that, each other now right that she has like tried to play us for dummies, like, oh, I didn't even know who those people were. You didn't see what you saw.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now I'm pissed too. And now I'm like, you know what? Get the manager, get him over here right now, or get him or her over here right now. Whoever's in charge, we need to talk to him.
So what did you get free?
I don't even know that we got something free on that. I'm more of the guy
did
that
you
just
pull
wants
a,
you
do
to
you know who
that,
I am?
No,
you,
God, no.
It's more about teaching the
Stop
lesson.
It.
have you,
Stop it.
Have you ever pulled a do you know who I am?
No.
I had a similar situation to that on Saturday night. We went to a restaurant here in Ankeny, and it was reasonably busy, but it was right before the Eastern Conference Finals game was about to start. We got there, it was probably 45 minutes before the game. We're thinking we'll sit down, order, food will get here, hopefully, and then we'll be done like in time to get back right as the game is starting or, yeah, you know, like halfway through the first quarter or something. We order drinks, 10 minutes pass, no drinks. Hasn't even come back taking our food order. And I'm just like, okay,
yeah,
like what's going on here? She brings them back. Then she walks away, doesn't even take our food order. Finally comes back to take the food order. At this point, we've already been there for half an hour.
Yep.
And she takes our food order. Then it gets to the point where the game is starting, and it's, of all the TVs, there's 50 TVs in this restaurant, not a single one of them is on the game. there's, like, they've got the Cubs game playing, which is fine. I'm cool with the Cubs game playing, but it's on 90% of the TVs with the sound all the way up. And I'm like, one TV. Like, I just want one TV on one of the biggest basketball games of the year. Like, is that big of a deal? And it took 45 minutes for our food to get to the table. By this time, we'd all finished our drinks. She had never come back in the time in between.
Yep.
And we ended up spending 2 hours at this restaurant because it took that long. And then our food was cold when we got there.
Did you at least get the game on the TV?
Yeah, on one TV, and it was on the complete opposite side
eventually
of the restaurant.
Was this, where were you at?
A newer establishment in Ankeny.
A newer establishment.
See, I just call places out. Jared's so nice about
it. As he's talking about this, I'm reminded of Buffalo Wild Wings, and this isn't a bad service story, although I've had those there, but a question for you two, would you or would you not have done this? When you go there for lunch, at least in most of the places, they've got a 15-minute timer that they put on the table. And as soon as the order's in, the waitress hits start on the timer. It's like on an iPad or whatever. Hits start, and then if the food isn't there in 15 minutes, it's free. That's their.
I have not heard of this.
Yeah, that's their goal. So the waitress, people might think I'm not, but I'm a pretty nice guy. I'm not going to bust people's balls over little things. But the last time I went and they did this, the waitress came out and hit stop, and it was 15:01. Would you have asked for a free meal?
No.
I did. I let it go.
Yeah, I would have too.
My wife.
Yeah.
We'd eaten for free.
Yeah. Well, clearly, as you look at that clock, it's 15:01.
Yeah.
The place that I had a beef with is in relative proximity to your office. I'll say a newer place.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In that area.
Yeah. He's talking about Grumpy Goat.
Oh man.
That's what he's talking about.
You didn't have to say anything. Why wouldn't you just let him say it?
No,
you start dropping breadcrumbs. Columbo's going to figure it out.
Advertiser, goodbye.
No, here's the thing.
I will.
If it gets back to them, you use that as the sales pitch. Like, guys, look at the reach that we have. It got back to you that, and you didn't knock them. You're trying to be very nice.
I've gone to Grumpy Goat many times since it's open. I've been there at least 10 times because it's within walking distance of my office. We go to lunch a lot. There a lot. I've been to dinner, and they are a newer restaurant that is either understaffed or figuring things out. He's absolutely right about what he's
saying. It takes a long
time,
man.
But they got a nice ambiance, atmosphere.
Yeah,
I think they'll be okay. So you got to give newer businesses a little bit of the benefit of the doubt.
So now let's really hope that this gets back to the Grumpy Goat guys, because then it will show them the power of the Fawcast.
It is powerful.
This should be an indication to them. Advertise. Maybe you get the right help.
Jeez.
We'll get everything. The Cyclone Fanatic guys can help you get things squared away, and you'll be a huge part of the Ankeny community.
Speaking of, before we got to go, someone bitched at us last week, in a nice way, that our podcast was too short. It was like 38 minutes long or something like that. So I promised an hour, which we've delivered today. But if we need to plug, speaking of advertising, our friend Ryan Grove, who's also a friend of Jared's. Ryan Grove's the go-to up in Ames.
now for real estate. So there you go. Ross, do you want to do a live read knowing nothing about Ryan Crowe at all? You're so good at him.
If you are, he's an Ames now?
He's an Ames agent. Yep. And I don't want to go to Ames anymore. So Ryan's the guy up there. What do you got?
This is the guy Chris did his wedding.
If you're looking into the Story County area,
sure.
Quite frankly,
sure.
I mean, outside of Ames, even in Boone and Ballard, Ryan is a guy that's connected with that community in a very real way. He is going to be able to assess your situation with your family, figure out where you should be. Is a backyard important? Is being able to remodel your home important? Is school district very important to you? Do you want your kids going to school where the Hoibergs went to school? Or do you want your kids going to school where Mark Charter went to school?
Yeah.
It's
an easy question.
Ryan will help you land in the right spot, not just for you, but for your family. These are huge decisions. Make sure that you're not just pulling a name out of a phone book and going with the person that wants your money. Ryan's going to make sure to find the right spot for your family.
Don't forget, a huge Iowa State
how's
fan.
How's that? I don't even know, Ryan. I hope you don't. Don't let me down, Ryan.
Huge Iowa State fan, and his family owns Ames, so maybe not.
But. He is connected with the community, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
good. So I didn't see. I was just making that up, and I was hoping
Ryan's mom has been an agent up there forever.
I don't know if there's anybody I know that just like knows more people than him.
Very seriously, Mark.
And the guy can shoot.
Man.
The guy can shoot baskets. Last season,
that's the least important thing.
No, it's not. The guy. No, here's the
vote
point.
Vote for Bill Bradley. He was in the NBA.
He's cool. No, he's cool under pressure. That's where I'm going.
Oh,
because
I see.
He went out. They've got the bank thing at Iowa State, right? Yeah, yep. Got to bank in three shots from different distances. He got called last year. Went out there and did that and like nailed it. Like it was nothing. Nothing at all.
And you think that's maybe indicative of how cool, good he would be in a closing?
Cool under pressure.
Yeah.
Dude.
Okay.
If you can do that in front of 14,000 with no problem.
Then you can sign papers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
it is important to have, and you have helped a friend of mine. When I first bought my house, before I knew Mark, I had a buddy that was an East Sider, the Hanson family, Lance
yep.
Hanson
yep.
And Josh, that had been realtors for generations. And that was such a benefit because what I wanted, I'm a kind of a do-it-yourselfer, I wanted a home that I could tear the carpets out of that would have hardwood floors. We could refinish it, but I wanted to be close to a good school. Those three things I nailed. Josh nailed for me. We looked at like three houses
yep.
that fit that demographic, and this one was the perfect one. It really is important to have somebody like that when you're looking.
You also want the people that can make tough phone calls. While I was sitting here, I got an email that one of my deals has died. Buyer financing fell through, and we're pretty close to closing. So I got to make that call after this and let the seller know that they have no
deal. I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
So,
I can't do that.
So, yeah, that's the fun part of the job that people don't realize.
Have fun.
Next week, we got Matt Campbell on, unless something changes, which I hope it won't. We're going to ask him if he could be any tree. Which one would it be?
Don't even.
We won't. We'll see you guys next week.